Thank you, Kobe, and for your warm welcome and for the chance to contribute to this discussion. And I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're meeting today, and in particular their women elders, and of course to everyone here today, dignitaries and all participants. I was really interested in the communication that went out about this event, where it referred to, it's time to break down barriers, remove silos and smash the glass ceiling. Well, I wasn't sure whether I should wear flares or tie-dyed t-shirt, because surely that was a promotional line taken out of the 1960s or so, 70s perhaps. It's time, it said. Well, I kind of think there's been time in abundance already on this topic of women in leadership, hasn't there? Time to break and remove and smash, and I guess that's why we're here again today, because it's kind of frustrating that we keep having to talk about women in leadership. So the topic today gives us all the challenge of moving from isms to inclusion, a really interesting topic. It was a great idea, or so I thought, and then I began brainstorming the isms that might represent the idea of driving greater inclusive behaviour. And this really brought out in me some deep issues of a lack of life. As I trawled through online Scrabble tools and Sudoku magic helpers and began to get involved in this challenge in a way that was just way too unhealthy. But I gave it a crack, and let's think about the isms that might relate to inclusion. And if you're not particularly interested in the topic, then perhaps just count them as I go through the speech, because I've given it a go. But some of those isms that might relate to inclusion, and particularly women in the workplace and women in leadership: sexism, elitism, cynicism, cronyism, tokenism, nepotism, absurdism, dogmatism. It's okay, I'll speak in a minute. It's not just one long list. Could have done that. But by this stage, it was becoming strangely edifying and a little bit of fun, which is a bit odd. Criticism, traditionalism, fundamentalism, favouritism, chauvinism, antagonism, scepticism, and egocentrism. And by the end, it was kind of spooky and a bit unnerving, really, but it had a sense of realism about it, because each one of these words at a point in time has been used to describe the experience of a woman or women in the workplace and or in leadership. So well done, Cedar, thank you. 2 hours of my life I will never get back. But the people in this room know that workforce diversity and inclusion matter. We know there's clear evidence that diversity and inclusion in the workforce are key to productivity and innovation. So we know that. We've heard the research that shows that organisations which value diversity and inclusion achieve greater staff satisfaction, better customer service outcomes, and improved decision making and performance. Their workforce is more connected, more motivated and productive. And as the public sector commissioner, I say today, the public sector needs that as much as anyone does, public and private. And all of this for the public sector is about making it better so we can serve the citizens of Western Australia even better than we do today. But the reality is, though, despite all that knowledge, the representation of diverse groups in the public sector continues to be low in comparison to the working population of those groups, and more particularly at the senior levels. And that's despite a range of initiatives and interventions over the years. So the facts: women have represented 3/4 of the public sector workforce over the past 7 years. Just shy of 73% of the whole public sector is made up of women. Over the same period, though, women have generally comprised only 1/3 of what we call the senior executive service, the senior leadership group. So just 1/3, until in the last 2 years, where we've hit a historic high of 42.5% of the senior leaders in the public service are now women. So also, we're closing the gender parity gap for women in the SES. Less than 2 years ago, it was forecast to achieve gender parity in our senior leadership by 2035. But now, with the improvements we've made, we'll make that gender parity up by 2022. So it's really terrific that we've made such great gains. And so I had the kind of mini fist pump happening for that. But when you put that alongside the fact that 73% of the whole sector are women, it kind of, you know, dampens my spirit a little. But there is still much to be celebrated. The gender pay gap also in the public sector is trending downward, albeit at a glacial pace. And so the public sector, I reckon, in this issue can either lead or lag, and given the high returns that we all know diversity can bring to work, I reckon the public sector needs to lead more. But I think we need to be brave when it comes to culturalism, which is about challenging the culture, and be courageous about the mechanism. See, I'm going with isms in case you're not following me. Which is about, you know, the mechanism that we'll use to challenge the approach. And I think we actually have to be honest about where we are in the struggle and our maturity in this issue in terms of having more women in senior leadership positions. Because I think the challenge is something about moving from old home week and the cottage industry that diversity sometimes in organisations sits in, where diversity sometimes seems to be for its own sake. Although there's always a good morning tea attached to it, designed to raise awareness. And I see that form of colonialism, if you like, in some diversity approaches, largely compliance and at heart, working so hard not to be offensive, but really struggling, I think, to challenge the paradigm. So it's safer to stick with awareness raising, but for God's sake, how much awareness raising do we need on the diversity topic? So in the public sector, I don't know about your own organisations, diversity often, the team of diversity is often in the back office, deep in the bowels of the HR department. And so we've all got a challenge, I think, around that. And that model is alive and well, not only in our sector, but other sectors. A myriad of programs, training, diversity events, morning teas, you'll see that's a recurring theme for me, and compliance reports. And they're largely tolerated because they don't challenge the underlying assumptions or beliefs. And they actually don't require the buy-in of the majority. So let me be clear though, I don't want anyone to misunderstand. We owe a debt to the practitioners that led in this first way, don't we? Many of whom are heroes and trailblazers, mostly women trying to make a difference in a context that's much harder than the one we face today, who cared, who stood up when it was damn hard to do so. We would have no platform to have these discussions without those people. So I don't want you to kind of be left in a cloud of pessimism. I want to turn more perhaps to a bit of optimism, because I am actually very optimistic on this issue. But I think we need, as I said before, a little bit of honesty going forward. So I know people in this room will want to tweet, and as Di said, that's terrific. But I'm just kind of go off script for a little moment and be a bit deliberately provocative to stimulate some different kinds of thinking. And the reason why I'm saying that is I don't really want to be on the front of the West tomorrow to say the public sector commissioner said, you know, and she's gone mad or something. So if you're texting, just, you know, be considerate. I'm deliberately trying to be provocative. The public sector is now not, you know, going renegade or something. God forbid. But what if we decided to be honest at a system level and recognise that fundamentally in our culture, despite programs and initiatives over many years, people still prefer those who are similar to themselves in the workplace? That an emotional connection, a likeness or a comfort usually trumps merit or meritocratic diversity every time. And if we confronted that one idea, how different our workplaces might be, and what course would we take? What if we gave up the great search for sameness that we call recruitment? Because even though people say they understand the business case for diversity, so often it doesn't convert to more women being recruited into senior leadership. And we do things to women. We bring them together. We give them handy hints. We mentor them. We encourage them. And we sometimes reward their efforts. I hope we're not trying to fix the women. Perhaps we're trying to arm them to operate in the workplace in a way that, you know, brings forward their skills and talents. But I'm interested in what we do about the ecosystem that we all work in, the beliefs and the culture that we all work in. What if we focused on heterogeneous talent management rather than diversity? And what if panels, what if organisations, what if leaders were held accountable for the extent of difference they actively brought and sought into the recruitment process, that they brought to the table for consideration, that somehow they were judged on a metric of how much they had developed women for senior leadership, or how they were able to pursue women for candidacy, rather than waiting for that lovely bonus when a terrific woman applies, or lament that no women applied at all. What if panels could only appoint, sorry men, I'm just being provocative, you can talk about it over lunch. What if panels could only appoint a man after showing the extent to which they had gone to recruit a superwoman, just while the targets are catching up? What if director generals had to put a business case forward for every selection they made that didn't bring some form of diversity to the table? What if search companies had real incentives to bring women more into the recruitment space, you know, to bring them forward? So as I said, they're not announcements for the public sector, for everyone from the public sector in the room. Perhaps this would make diversity central, core, main game stuff, not the special morning tea that we have on a special day. Because the nice to have special programs and special days, in my view, keep generating the myth that this is special, and it isn't. More than half, or just over half, the world's population are women. So here are my truisms as I rush to the end. I reckon we're failing to benefit from difference. While it's something we tack onto the main game, it's always going to be an aside. Number three, I don't have all the answers, but in the public sector, we've got a range of terrific people who are doing so much work, and Di very kindly gave us an ad for the diversification and inclusion strategy for the public sector, which has 6 action plans for diversity groups, and I'd love to be able to perhaps touch on some of that later. And we need collective effort. We need the inspiration and partnership and learning from people from other sectors. We've got so much to learn from others, both private and not-for-profit. So to finish off, I love we have greater professionalism in how we approach this topic, and modernism. And I hope that we can move beyond simplistic gestures of symbolism and really move into an expansionism of our thinking. And in the end, it's going to be all about collectivism, which is why we're all here today, showing great support and hopefully coming together to really, you know, think again about some of the issues that have confronted us all in the past. So I advocate for a bit of pragmatism, but also some real change to shift the cultural dial on this topic. So thanks, everyone. Thank you.